Welcome to another episode of Pearls of Passage. I'm your host, Ellie Atherton. I'm slightly under the weather this week, nothing major, and losing my voice a little bit. So I'm going to start the first in a series of episodes about the spiritual aspect of our humanness with a pre-recorded story. I imagine I'll have my voice back next week, and then we'll delve more deeply into the subject. So for this week, sit back and enjoy the story. It's called Saintly Support. When I met Margaret, she was debilitated and spending most of her time in bed, only getting up to go to and from the bathroom. Her husband, Bob, was doing his best to care for his ailing wife. Thankfully, they had children who helped on a regular basis by picking up groceries, cleaning the house, doing laundry, and cooking. One daughter would fly in from California and stay for a week or two at a time. She was a nurse and a great caregiver. One day, while Bob was in the kitchen, I had a private conversation with Margaret about worries and fears of dying. She told me she hadn't been sleeping well and was concerned about seeing her mom when she got to heaven. I asked if she could tell me why she worried about seeing her mom again. She shared a sad story with me, one I will never forget. As a young adult, Margaret had to take her mom to the hospital in a crisis situation. The doctors told her they needed to operate immediately in order to save her mother's life, and that even with the surgery, the odds of surviving were low. They asked for Margaret's permission to perform the surgery. She wanted to talk to her dad first and tried to reach him and several other family members, but was unable to. The decision rested entirely upon her shoulders. Margaret said she was afraid to make such a life and death decision alone, but since time was of the essence, she decided her mother should have the surgery. She sat alone, praying and waiting for the news. Within 30 minutes, the doctor appeared, saying they had tried their best, but unfortunately, her mother had died. Margaret said she was devastated and overwhelmed with having to tell her family what had transpired. "It's still the worst day of my entire life. Some of my family never forgave me for the choice I made. I never forgave myself either." She hung her head, still carrying the shame of a 60-year-old event. "I felt I had somehow let my mother down," she said. "I'm sorry, Margaret," I said when she finished the sad story that had haunted her for so long. "It sounds like your mom would have died if she didn't have the surgery. You chose the only option available that offered some hope," I told her, trying to relieve some of her guilt. "I thought so at the time, but since some of my family disagreed with my choice, I've had to live with their reaction all my life. Besides, I missed having my mom with me throughout my adult life. I couldn't ask for her advice as a young wife and mother or watch her enjoying my children when they were young. We were always so close. She was my best friend." "Oh, Margaret, maybe seeing her again will be good for both of you," I said. "I saw my dad recently in a dream, but no sign of my mom. I'm a bit worried that she's upset with me. I ask for forgiveness in my prayers. My faith is strong. I pray every day to God, Jesus, Mary, and to Mother Teresa." Her religion gave her comfort, and I had noticed she had a cross with Jesus on the wall above her bed. "I've noticed you have some Mother Teresa mementos throughout the house," I said. "Yes, I also have my Blessed Virgin scapular. She reached underneath her pillow and pulled it out, handing it to me. I admired its intricate detail and thought of the powerful comfort it offered her. "It's beautiful," I said as I handed it back to her. She gently tucked it back into its special place beneath her pillow. "Margaret, may I sit next to you on the bed?" "Of course," she said. She gently slid over toward the middle of the bed, then patted the edge of the bed next to her. "I understand that you believe in heaven," I said. "Oh, yes, my dear, of course I do." "Do you believe that God and heaven work in that way? That your mother harbors upset toward you even in heaven?" These were the serious questions I thought were the crux of her fears. Margaret didn't answer right away. She took my hand and rubbed the top of it, looking down, deep in thought. I waited for her response. She looked up and gave me a soft smile. "No, I don't suppose that would be the way of God. I know my mother loved me, Ellie. She wasn't one to hold a grudge." "So you believe she would have forgiven you long ago if necessary?" "Oh, yes, my mother was very forgiving." "Then it appears that it's only you that needs to forgive yourself." Her eyes became teary. I squeezed her hand, staying silent. After a moment, she said, "I've struggled for years to forgive myself because I thought some of my relatives were still angry with me. We never discuss it, so maybe they aren't anymore. I don't know. But that's why I was never able to forgive myself." Several priests over the years told me to ask God for forgiveness and then forgive myself. She paused and shook her head, then looked upward as if recounting the desperate situation again. It broke my heart to think that her life had been altered in such a sad and negative way by that one event. It was like a black cloud that had followed her and impeded the true joy she deserved in her life. I wondered if she had placed that black mark on herself and that her mother and her maker knew better. "Your mother would have died without the surgery. You took the slim chance and the only chance she had for life. You had no option other than that," I offered. "Do you think you can find a way to forgive yourself now, Margaret? Do you want to meet with the chaplain again and talk about this in more depth?" I asked. "Yes, that might be helpful. I like Will very much. He's such a comfort to me." "Yes, Will has a wonderful way about him. I'll let him know you'd like a visit from him." "Thank you for talking with me about this," she said with a smile and a squeeze of my hand. "Oh, you're welcome. I'm glad we could talk. Thanks for trusting me to hear your story. Maybe it's time to lift that burden from your heart. I'm sorry you've had to carry it for so long, Margaret." I leaned in to hug her. "Can I hug you?" "Of course, I love hugs," she said, reaching her weary arms around my neck. Trying to lighten the mood for her, once she let go, I changed the subject. "So I understand from your husband that Suzanne is arriving in a few days." "Yes, I'm looking forward to seeing her again. She's wonderful, isn't she?" "Yes, Suzanne seems like a great daughter. I enjoyed meeting her during your last visit." "Can I ask you how you think Bob's doing lately?" I asked, knowing as an elderly caregiver, the task was taking a toll on him. "He's tired. I think my care is a lot for him now. I'm glad we have the kids to help with cooking and cleaning, and the hospice nursing assistants to help me dress and bathe. I don't know what we'd do without them." I loved hearing this. "They're wonderful, aren't they? I call them the angels of hospice," I said, proud of my colleagues. The licensed nursing assistants are some of the most dedicated people on the hospice team. They're a caring and devoted group, and in my opinion, are under-recognized and underpaid. Margaret's daughter, Suzanne, had arrived the day before my next visit. I met with her in the kitchen before going in to see her mom and brought her up to speed on the medication changes since her last visit. I reviewed the new symptoms we had been seeing and the expected disease progression. She had observed the same symptoms and had noticed a significant decline in her mom since her last visit 4 weeks prior. Suzanne said her dad was relieved to have her home again. He knew he could catch up on some much-needed sleep while she was in the role of primary caregiver and in the home 24/7. He had been sleeping on the couch at night to be close to Margaret in case she needed anything. Bob had told me several times that it wasn't comfortable, so he looked forward to sleeping upstairs in his own bed once Suzanne arrived. Suzanne told me her mom had slept deeply overnight. She hadn't been interested in socializing in her usual way, which raised some concern for Suzanne. "She's usually quite talkative and wants me with her every minute on the day I arrive, but she just wanted to sleep yesterday after a short conversation." I knew there was a lot to discuss around these changes, so I said, "Why don't I do my nursing assessment first, and then you and I can talk afterward?" Suzanne nodded. "Sounds like a good plan." I went to the bedroom where Margaret was resting, and she woke easily to my voice. "Hello, how are you today?" I inquired. "Hi, Ellie," she said in a weakened voice. "I'm very tired today. I'm not sleeping very well." I was confused by her response after hearing Suzanne say her mom had slept deeply overnight. "We could give you a small dose of Ativan to help you relax at bedtime. Maybe that would put you into a deeper sleep so you could feel more rested in the morning," I suggested. "Okay, I'll try it." She slowly propped herself up against her pillow and the headboard, then let out a sigh. Moving her body was hard work now. I had my stethoscope in hand and sat next to her on the bed. "I'm happy to report that I saw my mom in a dream last night, and I felt so relieved," she beamed at me. "How about that? I'm so glad you saw her and that you don't have to worry about it anymore." "Me too. Oh, it was wonderful to see her, and so real the way she was hugging me and telling me she missed me." "That's lovely, Margaret. Dreams like that can be such a comfort." She was staring off and smiling as if revisiting the sweet dream. I stayed silent until she came back to me. "Can I get your vitals? Any pain today?" "No pain. Just, as I said, very tired." "Well, I'll be quick so you can get back to resting. I'll visit again tomorrow to see how the Ativan worked." I sensed she was heading into her final phase. When I returned to the kitchen to talk with Suzanne, we discussed adding 0.5 milligram of Ativan to the bedtime medications. Suzanne, being a nurse, was familiar with this medication and its effectiveness and agreed to administer it at bedtime. "Your mom seems to be entering her final phase, as evidenced by her sleeping most of the day, no interest in food, and seeing her deceased loved ones in dreams." "I think so, too. I'm afraid she may have been waiting for me to return before starting her dying process." "I wholeheartedly agree. The power of the spirit at work. Amazing, isn't it?" "It really is. You must see so many spiritual happenings in your work," she said. "Yes, I do. I consider it a perk of being a hospice nurse," I smiled. "That's a nice way to look at it," she said. I feel privileged to be working so closely to that thin veil between here and the afterlife. I'm sure you encounter spiritual happenings in the hospital, don't you? On occasion, yes, but you must have frequent experiences. You know, I do, but many of my colleagues say they don't. I've come to understand that it has more to do with being open to them. That makes sense. I don't know how anyone can work in medicine and not be aware and in awe of the spiritual aspect of the human experience. I agree, it's the truth of the placebo effect. Right, she said. We laughed together at this simple yet profound fact. When I arrived the next day, Suzanne said her mom had slept deeply overnight. I was glad to hear this, assuming the Advan had worked well. I headed directly in to check on Margaret and get her report. She was sitting up in bed, holding her little brown scapular with the Blessed Mother on it. "How did you sleep last night?" I asked. "Did the Advan help you?" "No, I was up a lot during the night," she responded to my surprise. But I remained silent as she went on. "I remember having a vision, and I want to tell you about it." I was very interested to hear what she had seen in her vision and what message she had taken from it. Margaret asked me to sit in my usual place on the bed next to her. She began by saying, "You know that I love Mother Teresa and have her medallions everywhere in my house." "Yes, I remember. I think that's wonderful. The medallions seem to give you so much comfort." "Oh, yes, they do give me comfort. I pray to Mother Teresa and Mother Mary all the time." She gently rubbed the scapular as she spoke. "The most amazing thing happened last night. Mother Teresa was here, right here in my room," she exclaimed joyfully. "She was sitting right next to me on the bed where you are now, and she was talking to me." "Oh my gosh, how wonderful! What a dream!" I said. "No, this wasn't a dream," she protested. "This was real. Mother Teresa was right here in my room. I saw her. I heard her. I can't begin to tell you how much comfort she gave me by visiting." I realized I had misspoken by calling her vision a dream. I've had many dreams about things before they happened, or visits from deceased loved ones that I understood to be messages. I had always called them dreams, but maybe the better term was visions. I was learning again. "That's extraordinary. I'm so glad you could feel her comfort," I said, not wanting to pry into her private conversation with the saint. I waited to see if she wanted to share more with me. "Oh, it was so wonderful," she said with a smile, and then took in a deep breath, letting it out slowly. After a moment and no more details, I asked, "Have you shared this with your family yet?" "Oh, yes, I told Suzanne first thing this morning. She was so excited to learn of it." "So then can I ask you if you're still worried about dying or worried about seeing your mom?" I hoped she had overcome the fears that seemed to be holding her back from death. "I'm not worried about dying or afraid of dying anymore. Seeing my mother in my dream the other night and talking to Will yesterday helped me. I try not to worry about my husband and how he'll get by when I'm gone. I want him to be okay. He was always so dependent on me for all the housework, cooking, laundry, grocery shopping, and so on. I know the kids will keep helping him. He may end up living with one of them, because this old house has become too much for us anyway." I nodded, relieved to know he wouldn't be going it alone in the big old house. "You have a great family. I hope knowing they'll care for Bob helps ease your worries about him." "Oh, it does, yes. Still, after so many years together, it's hard to stop caring. I'll miss them all, but I'm ready to go. I'm just so tired of living, and all I want to do is sleep. This old body is just plain worn out, she said, rubbing her scapular. Can I check your vitals of your worn-out old body? I smiled. Margaret laughed. Sure you can. Are you having any pain or shortness of breath today? I still get short of breath when I walk to the bathroom, but that's it. We can order you oxygen. No, I really don't want it, dear. Thank you. You're the boss, Margaret, I winked at her. You're darn tootin' I am, she sat up straighter. After I completed her nursing assessment, I told her I would see her again the next day. I was eager to head back into the kitchen to talk to her daughter about Margaret's overnight visitor and get her take on it. What an amazing story your mom just shared with me about a visit from Mother Teresa. Suzanne looked at me and smiled with a bit of a playfulness in her eyes. She said, you know what? I don't think it was a dream. Neither do I said. You don't? She said with some surprise. No, I believe she really saw her. Suzanne smiled and motioned to the kitchen nook. Can you sit down for a minute? Do you have time for some tea? She asked. Sure, I'd love a cup of tea. Do you mind if I work on your mom's assessment a little bit while you heat the water? No, I totally understand. Isn't it crazy how much we nurses have to document? She replied. No kidding. I resent it. Computers were supposed to make things easier for us. Remember that? I do, she said, laughing. In my opinion, precious time has been taken away from the important one-on-one we used to spend with our patients. I still fight to make space for it. Otherwise, without that connection to them, I couldn't do this work of hospice. I confessed. I'm the same way, she said. Please go ahead and get some of your work out of the way. I'll get us some tea and a muffin. I settled in at the breakfast nook and started documenting. Soon, Suzanne poured the hot water over the lemongrass tea bags and two mugs. The mild citrus scent created a lovely aroma in the sunny kitchen. She sat down at the table and placed the mugs and some muffins in front of us. Help yourself. I made them this morning, she said. You know my weakness, desserts, I said as I reached for one. She chuckled and nodded as she placed one on her plate. Are you a spiritual woman, Ellie? She inquired. I loved her question and wondered where she was going with it. Very much so. I've been to many different churches throughout my adult life. None gave me the deep spirituality I was looking to find. In fact, my patients have taught me so much more about what spirituality means than the church ever did. I can understand that, she agreed. Yes, and I don't doubt that your mom communicated with Mother Teresa last night, I said. Her description of the vividness of the visit and the deep joy as she spoke of it was unmistakably real. I think she saw her too, but there's more to it, she said, with that playful smile again. You see, I think Mother Teresa came to her in a true vision as a way of caring for her because she's my mother. I was taking a sip of tea and her statement took me by surprise. I was a bit confused and curious, so I leaned in to hear more. I have a great story of my own, she said. I'd love to hear it, I responded. She went on. When Mother Teresa was in the hospital about 15 years ago, I was her nurse. She gave me several of the Mother Mary scapulars. I gave one to my mom, and she keeps it under her pillow. Her words took my breath away. I set my mug of hot tea down and watched her face lighting up, just as her mother's had as she shared the vision with me. Mother Teresa and I made a beautiful connection over the several weeks she was in the hospital. It was a privilege to be her nurse. She said she was so grateful for my kind and compassionate care during her hospital stay. Oh my gosh, Suzanne, I have goosebumps. I never expected to hear this story. Suzanne went on. She told me she would pray for me to be blessed in my work as a nurse. I believe because I gave her great care and comforted her when she was ill and vulnerable, she came to give comfort to my mom in her time of need. I think this is her way of thanking me. Wow, how beautiful and fitting, I said in awe of the story, my eyes filled with joyful tears. I felt an enormous privilege for having been present to learn about the vision firsthand from Margaret, the woman who experienced the divine visit. And I believed what Suzanne had suggested was the reason for it. After learning of her connection to Mother Teresa in the hospital, it all made perfect sense to me. I believed that spirits made appearances, and I had experienced some visits myself over the years, though never from a saint. I had immense respect for Mother Teresa. She was a hospice pioneer in a time and a place that challenged her to offer compassionate care to Calcutta's unwanted and forgotten people. On my most challenging days in hospice, I could not imagine how she managed with so little to assist her in the care of the dying. I was glad to learn in 2016 that the church finally recognized her for her life of giving and canonized her as Saint Teresa of Calcutta. Later that day, I thought back to the moment I learned of her visit from Margaret as she recounted it. Although I had not been present for Mother Teresa's appearance, I felt as if she had also touched my life on that day. I had sat in the very spot where she had offered her blessings to my patient only hours earlier. It was an incredible honor, to say the least, and the thought of it made me even more curious about how our spirits function after life ceases. We have so much to learn and experience about death and what lies beyond. 3 days later, Margaret found her peace in the early dawn hours with her husband and children by her side. Suzanne and I said we could imagine that two loving mothers had ushered Margaret out of this world and into the next. I hope you enjoyed this great story. It still gives me goosebumps listening to it. I loved all the beautiful and unexpected connections that came to comfort Margaret as she approached her final days. And I hope this story makes you ponder the incredible and loving connections that I believe are all around each and every one of us throughout our earthly lives. I want to take a minute before I go to thank Designated Diver for the beautiful soundtrack that accompanies this podcast each week. This story about Margaret really rings true of what I say at the end of each episode. Life offers endless possibilities. We simply need to be open to them. Here's to a good life and a good death. Have a great week.